Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing WatsonX Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with WatsonX Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
During the summertime when the weather gets hot, I can only imagine how much time you plan to spend outside with friends and family or on your couch with that AC blasting. AT&T 5G and home internet keeps you connected, whether you're at home or on the go, so you can stay connected to your loved ones and to your favorite things. Whether you're sharing pics from the best rooftops, video calling your friends from an outdoor concert, or streaming your favorite show, episode after episode after episode. So connect at home or on the move with AT&T 5G and home internet and create memories and more all summer long. AT&T 5G requires compatible plan and device. Coverage not available everywhere. Learn more at att.com/5G for you.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of 100 Words or Less, the podcast. I am your host, Ray Harkins, bringing you another interesting, exciting, hopefully educational conversation with someone who is affiliated with the independent music scene. And the guest this week is a person who completely fits that bill. Because, I mean, if they didn't, then I would be basically going back on everything I just told you about the show. But I promise I will deliver that to you. This is Mr. Toby Morse, who is the vocalist for a band called H2O, who is, I'm just going to put it out there. I mean, they're legendary within the context of punk and hardcore. They've been at it for 20 plus years, and Toby has been a purveyor of everything positive and awesome within that music scene, ultimately spreading a positive message, which is something that a lot of people that get drawn to independent music don't necessarily think of doing, even though you kind of can run on a few cliches when you do have the whole, you know, finger pointing positivity, cheese ball lyrics inserted here. But Toby fortunately does not fall into that trap. I was very excited to go over to his apartment one day, but I'm getting ahead of myself. I'll get to you as far as the context in which our interview took place after this fine little business snippet about the show. This is the final week of the fundraising month for 100 Words or Less. And I've kind of adapted a public radio model. So for those of you that regularly listen to the show, I apologize, but basically the month of April and the month of November, you will hear me begging for money. That's just a reality, and you're going to have to deal with it. And even if you give money, I apologize. I wish there's a way that I could filter out the these pleas to the people who contribute regularly. So you can contribute one of two ways. And ultimately, it isn't so much about the financial gains that I receive from the show, because I honestly don't. I lose money on this thing, and that's fine. But ultimately, what it does, your dollar, $2, $10, $20 throws a vote towards this independent media. It's literally me and one other person that does this thing. There are companies and massive media organizations that raise millions of dollars to start stuff like this up. But I've been doing it for close to 3 years and have received a pretty solid listenership. Tens of thousands of you download the show each week. That gives me a sense of pride already. But you contributing some money towards this just showcases the fact that, like, hey, this is worth my time and this is worth my effort to give you some of my hard-earned money. I want to put it in context for you. I'm not trying to line my own pockets and really try to, you know, make this into something that was never meant to be at the beginning, because I will do this for years to come as long as I have the schedule and the time. You can contribute one of two ways. First of all, both of these things are in the show notes. So any sort of podcast catcher or what have you, click on the information and you'll be able to see two direct links. One of them is a way that you can do a monthly contribution fee. So if you do $1 a month, that's $12 a year. That is like the easiest thing that you can do via patreon.com/xpurposex. Or if you decide to do a one-time donation, you can do that on the website, 100wordspodcast.com. And then you can see on the right side of the page, there's a little yellow donate button. So please do that if you are a regular listener, if you are a one-time listener, whatever. If you are feeling the compulsion of just like, yes, here we go. Here it is in the digital tip jar, as it were. I appreciate you for doing that. And thank you very much for all of you who have contributed this past month. Like I've really tried to make sure that this month has some really, really, really high profile guests and people that will hopefully be introduced to the show for the very first time. And then all of a sudden be opened up to a whole different world of like, oh my gosh, there's like all these 150 some odd hours of other shows I can check out. So thank you for joining and hopefully you decide to contribute. Toby, I'm trying to think of the way that to best describe him. I've worked with him on and off for a couple of years, and him and I have become friendly. I was a little hesitant to have him on based on the fact that Toby, as you will come to find out in the interview, and I kind of, you know, call him out on it, not in a bad way, just in a way where it's like, he's an extremely busy dude. And you can always tell his head's in many different places at once. And that's great because obviously if it weren't for that, he wouldn't be able to achieve all that he's achieved. I'm always kind of nervous when I bring people in to this context to be like, hey, you're going to sit with me for an hour and hopefully you'll be able to, you know, we'll be able to have a serious discussion. The day came and, you know, show up at his house and, you know, he was whatever, 15 or so minutes late. Like I said, not throwing it against him to be like, dude, what the fuck, man? Why were you 15 minutes late? But I was like, oh, I don't know if he's going to be able to like dive right into this conversation. You know, he just came for lunch and then needs to go pick up his kid. And oh man, this isn't the ideal situation, but he blew my mind. He was like locked in, focused. Well, I don't think he was expecting me to have, I guess, as much insight or as conversation points as I did towards him. And it was such a good conversation. So Toby revealed a lot about himself that honestly I never knew, and a lot of things about the band and just so many great things. And I'll stop babbling. Here's my discussion with Toby Morse from H2O. I'm excited to bring it to you. So here it is. And I'll talk to you after the jump. Kind of, you know, your music, all that sort of stuff. But the H2O obviously existing for as long as it has, like, you know, you guys are ubiquitous. When I mean, like, everybody that kind of gets into punk or hardcore is like kind of given a starter kit where it's like, all right, here's like, you know, 20 or 30 records. And like, you know, maybe chronologically speaking.
Okay.
And like H2O is usually, you know, included in that.
That'd be awesome. It's true.
I mean, you don't have to say it. I'll say it.
Okay.
But I think, you know, partially because obviously you still exist and put out music. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think, you know, obviously keeps you relevant from that perspective. And this is kind of a sort of tacky cliche question, but I'm sure it's one of those things where reflecting on kind of your band's legacy, like that's probably difficult for you to do. Like in the sense of like looking back on the band's like lifespan, mm-hmm. it's probably hard for you to put it in perspective because you're still like doing it.
Doing it.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that totally makes sense.
Is it one of those things where you look back on certain eras more fondly than others, or is it all just kind of like jumbled together because you've experienced so much?
There's different highs and lows of our career.
Yeah.
You know, there's different, we're in different labels and we had crazy tours with awesome bands.
Right.
Because when we first came out, there was nobody really doing melodic kind of style hardcore in New York City. It was
Absolutely.
Happening everywhere else, obviously, because
yeah.
we were inspired by so many different bands. But when we first came out, it was pretty exciting because a lot of the music was really like chugga-chugga. It was more like harder and
yep.
More metal edge to it. And then we came out with our 7-inch and we had a love song on there. And people were just like, what? And because of me being a roadie, I guess, we're sick of it all, the people hung out with or how I looked or whatever, people didn't expect the H sort of sound like that.
Right.
And so when we came out, it was just like people were just like kind of taken back by it, but they really connected to it. I think it was kind of like a breath of fresh air for that at that time.
Sure.
In 1995.
Right.
So that was pretty exciting. And in this getting to play with so many bands, like our second show was our first show was Murphy's Law. The second show was Cro-Mags. Mm-hmm. And like all these people that I've known just from the scene when I didn't have a band, all like just kind of
supported you, probably.
Supporting us. And like none of us are born in New York. We all moved to New York. I moved to New York in 88. And the rest of my band, we all moved to New York. And we didn't move together as a band. Like my brother was
you
already been out
crowd. Sure.
Yeah, so separate. So we were born there, and to get not accepted, but taken under everybody's wings in the New York hardcore scene, like right off the beginning, it was incredible feeling. So like the first couple shows and the first tour of Murphy's Law, that was like our first real tour.
Right.
There's so many crazy things and so many awesome moments that I always have those memories. And I think about stuff like that. Yeah, it is 20 years. It doesn't seem like it's that long because everything seems kind of like
pretty
yesterday.
Fresh. And, yeah. I'm sure there's elements of your early years when you obviously were playing those shows that you probably were like, we probably have no business playing the show, but we are. Like, did you?
Yeah. our main thing was we go and we jump on shows. So I remember us going to jump on a show in Philly with like Doc Hopper and maybe 108 or something. And we knew somebody there and let us play like three or four songs.
right.
And we did that a bunch. Yeah, we did it a bunch.
So you guys were the band that showed up and were like, I guess we'll put H2O on this thing.
Yeah. But it was only because our friends were playing. We were trying to get gigs.
They're like, come on out. Right.
They hop on, play a couple of songs. That was super awesome. The one amazing memory of our first show is that my wife was there with her boyfriend.
Right.
And we were just friends.
Right.
And it's crazy that she would talk about it now that like she took like an $80 cab from Manhattan to come to the show and support because we were friends with a guy she was going to be marrying at the time.
Right. But she was with someone else at the time.
And like going to that show, that's a pretty awesome memory.
Yeah.
That first show and now.
Yeah, no, that's incredible. Like you mentioned, you were not born in New York City. Where were you born and raised?
Taunton, Mass.
Okay. And you moved up to New York City when you were like 14, 15?
18. So I was born in Taunton, Massachusetts, and then I moved to Newport, Rhode Island.
Where's Taunton? I don't even know where Taunton is.
It's like close to Brockton, kind of near Boston.
Okay.
So I was born there, then I moved to Newport, Rhode Island, and then my mom got a job managing apartment complex in Southern Maryland.
Okay.
So then we moved there from my high school, and Rusty Pistachio, my guitar player, he was the maintenance man there.
Right. Shut
the... He was born there. I mean,
I had no idea.
Rusty had like a mullet, and he was the maintenance man in the apartment complex.
Right.
And so we kind of became friends with him, and like we were like full-on skaters. Like we got into it really hard in Newport with the Verbal Assault guys and growing up with those guys.
Right.
Skating, wearing checkered pants and like bright Converse and stuff. So we came to this total southern part of Maryland where there was no skateboarding.
Right.
And then we were like one of the second times hanging out with Rusty. My brother's like, oh, can I try your board? And Rusty had this really skinny Hobie skateboard. It's called Hobie, I think.
Yeah.
And my brother did like an ollie or something and broke it in half. And Rusty's like, oh man, you broke my board.
Right.
And then a couple months later, be friends with Rusty. He actually stole, I don't want to get him in trouble.
Maybe borrowed. Yeah.
He borrowed.
Well, I think the statute of limitation is okay now.
That's right. He borrowed wood from the maintenance shed.
Okay,
He built us a quarter pipe.
That's amazing.
I'll send you pictures.
Sure.
And he got fired from his job.
Oh, because he did that?
Yeah, because he did that. And we had a sick quarter pipe in the apartment complex.
That's amazing. And and they're like, how did this get built?
Exactly.
Oh, just from the shed of those wood pieces.
So basically, it's crazy, not to give us total props, we kind of brought skateboarding and punk rock to St. Mary's County, Maryland.
Yeah.
Because now there's skate parks there. We met so many people because of that.
Well, because you were obviously taking, because you were moving so much, you were taking all these influences that you kind of learned in other places and were like, hey, this is what we were into before. And everyone's like, what is that new shit, man? Cool.
Skateboarding hadn't hit there yet.
Right.
Let's see, 83.
And so what was your family structure like growing up? Like, you know, mom, dad, like brothers, like how was that all?
When I was 3, my dad died.
Okay.
When he was 33 years old of a rare heart condition.
You probably have no, like, do you have any memories of him?
I got photos, I got stories. That's all really
that's
I have.
That's all you have,
My two brothers have the most memories ever because they're oldest, obviously.
Okay.
But I got some key awesome stories about him.
So you were the youngest of 3?
Youngest.
Okay.
So as soon as that happened, my mom started, like, really working, like, 2 or 3 jobs.
Yeah.
And
you had like babysitters and nannies and that's
my
grandma
and my grandpa were a big part of my life.
That's huge.
Big part of my life. I go there every single weekend. Every Saturday, they buy me a Matchbox car at Bradley's. That was my thing. I get a Matchbox car every Saturday.
Right. Something to look forward to. Yeah.
So because of that, I always thank my brothers for scaring me straight, because my mom was working and my brothers were watching me.
Uh-huh.
And they'd have their parties in the house. They had people over.
Sure. You guys were latchkey kids, so you could kind of do whatever you wanted.
So they'd be drinking. There'd be stuff going on in the house. But they're the ones that got me into skateboarding. They're the ones that got me into punk rock.
Okay.
So that's one of the most amazing things that ever happened to me because of my brothers.
Right.
They turned me on to that.
They were your ushers, so to speak. Because everybody needs that either older brother, older sibling, like weirdo at a record store. You need that one sort of person being like, yo, like here's the good stuff.
Exactly. And it was my brother. So
it's amazing.
So that was awesome. And my grandparents were a big part of my life. And we moved around. Obviously, we moved to Maryland just for that job.
Right.
And because of that, I met Rusty, I met so many people. Then we started going to like shows in Washington, D.C.
Sure.
Getting to see that part of like the mid, late 80s of all the great, crazy stuff in Washington, D.C. I saw Embrace, saw so many great bands, Rites of Spring, Fugazi's fifth show. I have the lyric sheet. He was handing out lyric sheets at the show.
Right. That's what they did. Yeah.
So I got and then Verbal Assault in Rhode Island. So I got like some Massachusetts. I was super young, but I got the Rhode Island, which is like the Verbal Assault, Vicious Circle, Positive Outlook Kids.
Yeah.
That's what really got me into it. And then moved to Maryland, got to go to D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved to New York by myself when I was 18.
Right. It strikes me too, where because I think partially probably because of what your brothers did for you, you were not, because most kids, like when they first started getting into music, they kind of stick to their one or two lanes. You know, they're like, oh yeah, I'm a hardcore kid. Like you were listening to a wide variety of stuff, probably just because you all defined it as like hardcore in some capacity.
Yeah, yeah.
So like you seem to always, and still to this day, like the way that you display your musical taste, where it's just like, oh yeah, Coldplay's one of my favorite bands, and like you're unabashed about like what you like. And I think that's an important point, because I think, you know, whatever, a 14-year-old kid that feels shamed because they like a certain record because it's a guilty pleasure, you're just like, no, it's fine.
It's okay. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I was into like, then when I got really into like hip-hop when I moved to New York.
Right.
But I was more like punk rock, and I liked the fast punk rock that I could skate to, and then the skate rock cassettes,
sure,
skate to that stuff. But then I didn't hate my mom. I didn't know what Anarchy in the UK was, and a lot of that punk rock that I liked, it was aggressive. I couldn't relate lyrically to it.
Right.
So then that's when I went, found 7 Seconds, and then found Minor Threat.
The Positive Four stuff.
So I found the bands that actually had a message that I could relate to, because I hadn't tried anything when I heard Minor Threat for the first time. I was like 12 or 13. I didn't try anything anyway. And I saw my brothers, and I was like, it scared the crap out of me. I was like, oh my God.
You're like, I don't want to be like
that.
They
didn't give me wedgie. They were just messing. It wasn't crazy, but like, I just saw them drinking. I was like, oh my God, that's so crazy.
Yeah,
my
that doesn't
mom
look
smoked
fun.
Cigarettes. My mom drank.
Uh-huh.
But like, my mom just told me actually recently this past year that she was chain smoking cigarettes all through pregnancies, which is kind of crazy.
But to put that in context, that's a different time and a place. My mom smoked up until she was like 4 or 5 months pregnant with me. I joke around with her all the time where I'm just like, you gave me asthma, mom. You gave me.
So you have asthma?
I do have asthma.
So you
anything that goes wrong with your body, you can just blame on your mom.
Wow, that's crazy. I'm lucky, man. I'm doing good right now. Maybe that's why I never wanted to try anything. I don't know.
No, it's true. Well, because you were surrounded by it, and it just, I presume in some capacity, it just didn't look fun.
It didn't. And then when I heard Minor Threat telling me like, you don't have to do that and be cool, and I was like, oh my God, I'm not the outcast. I'm not the weirdo.
You're like, there's other people that are doing this.
So yeah, then I met more people like that.
Right, right. You, correct me if I'm wrong here, but you, and still to this day, like there is a youthful energy about you. And also I would dare say like a very ADD nature to yourself.
Sure.
Were you ever like diagnosed?
Nope.
Or is it one of those things where it was just like, because you were so active, it was like, that's how he gets out all his stuff.
You know what? I think my mom might have put me on something, maybe, if I think about it now. But not, it wasn't called ADD back then.
No, you didn't. That term didn't exist until much later. But
I was just a super hyper spazzy kid.
Right.
My wife swears I don't have ADD. My friends have OCD, ADD. My wife's been married to me almost 20 years. She knows me better than anybody
else. She knows you, yeah.
I'm just all over the place.
Right.
I've always been a hyper person.
Yeah.
And that's why I can't drink coffee and stuff like that. I'll go really crazy.
I couldn't even fathom you on like any stimulant. Like you would be.
People I probably drank coffee, honestly, I'll be able to see. Maybe coffee.
Less than 10 times.
Less than 15 times my entire life.
Right, right, right.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We're sitting here. It's like June. And you're like, where has the time gone? And everybody's like, oh my gosh, I have no idea. I got to like accomplish all these other things. Take a moment. Focus on the things that obviously for one matter to you, but for two, look back, be like, what have I done well? What have I done not so well? And maybe I can, you know, ask some friends and family for some help, but Where I have always gone to in regards to figuring out what I can do better, therapy. Therapy is an incredible tool at your arsenal that you can dip into. I've done it for my marriage. I've done it for myself personally. And I'm a huge advocate for what therapy can do for you because it is a third party that's able to look at what you can do to improve your life and be a person to help you along in your journey. And so I think if you were thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and entirely suited to your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire, you get matched with a licensed therapist, and then boom, you're done. It's great. And then if you're not vibing with the therapist, you can switch it at no additional cost. So take a moment, reflect on the things you've done, reflect on the things you want to do, and visit betterhelp.com/ray today to get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/ray.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
You're probably just humming. You were probably existing at some different plane where people were like, what? I don't need, like.
But people that have seen me on coffee, they tell other people about it, and they want to have me do that in front of them to show them how it happens to me.
how this stimulant works.
Yeah. So, yeah, I've always been hyper, always been like that. I'm all over the place.
Right.
Super, super focused, but I'm also a spaz.
That is kind of different from, you know, other people that are obviously like hyper and really, you know, kind of bouncing off the walls. You seem also like you can focus too, where it's, yes, like when kind of the rubber hits the road, where you're like, oh, like I have to do this now.
Yes.
You're able to kind of like accomplish it, like the follow through.
Yes.
Which that's
I
hard.
I do follow through. I have a lot of lists around the house.
Right.
One more. That's not OCD. I guess that's OCD. But one more thing I want to say. I don't want to ever say I have ADD or OCD, because I did that recently.
Yeah.
And somebody that really had it hit me up on Twitter, and they really bummed that I wasn't making fun. I was just saying that people would tell me I have it.
Yeah.
And I've never been diagnosed with it, so I'm not going to claim that I have
it. No. Right. Yeah. You're
it's
not
a serious issue.
It is.
It's really serious, and like it really affects people.
It absolutely does. Yeah. No. That's I just wanted to put it out there because it was okay. one of those things where I was like, you know, this I'm just curious for myself. So obviously as the band kind of, you know, started playing shows in New York, and you obviously started to, you know, pick up steam and momentum, like you said, you were immediately drawn to all the positive aspects of, you know, music and the lyrics and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So
but I like the aggressiveness of it too.
Right. But the positivity behind it.
Yeah, but I also like the street stuff. I love the Cro-Mags, and I like all that stuff too, because I knew them, and I was living in New York, going to CB's every weekend, hanging out with them, seeing them around, and knowing that these guys really live that stuff. So I was just like, this is some real, this is some different style hardcore.
Right.
This isn't like the stuff I heard in Rhode Island or the stuff I heard in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
There's a different edge to it here.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a whole different beast.
It is.
And
different
energy. The thing that I've always found interesting about you in particular was the fact that because like positivity, you know, essentially runs through your veins, and you obviously promote that lifestyle. You know, violence has circled the band because of its atmosphere.
Totally.
And how is that?
I love hip hop, gangster rap too.
Right. How is that? Because you were, like you said, you were literally being raised. I mean, coming up in the hardcore scene around people who were affiliated with gangs and doing like serious crimes. And how is it one of those things where you were able to kind of like, you know, I guess reconcile that in your head where you're like, I can be friends and be supportive with these people, even though I myself am not necessarily a violent person, you know?
Yeah, I feel like I met all kinds of people. And when I moved to New York, that was such a reality because I was 18 years old. I was by myself.
Yeah,
I was
probably clueless.
I was a pen pal with Timmy Chunks from Token Entry that I met a couple times in real life at shows in D.C. He said, come move to Queens. It was one of my favorite bands. I moved to New York by myself. I got dropped off at CBGB's by my friend Dave Weisskopf with all my luggage at a Token Entry show at CBGB's. And then I had never been in. I've only been there once as a kid with my uncles.
Right.
And it was so scary.
Sure.
It was a crazy show. I'm moving to Flushing, Queens. I have no job. I have nothing. I want to do something in music. I don't know what I'm doing. And then I saw that. Yeah, I saw there was crazy fights at CBGB's.
Right.
People got stabbed. It was just a whole different element. But like, I guess I maneuvered pretty well. And also, it's funny because a lot of the older guys and a lot of the guys in the scene, they would like, oh, this is Toby from, this is a little hick from Maryland.
Right.
But like, I wasn't from Maryland. I was from Massachusetts.
Right.
But since I came from
labeled you as a hick?
They thought this mess with me, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, no,
but
I know.
At the same time, they took me under their wing, and it's like, I feel like New York City gets one of the worst reps for being a violent place.
Definitely.
When in actuality, it wasn't like that. It wasn't even, I mean, it was, yes, there was violence. Yes, it was crazy. But there's cities all over the country that crazy stuff was happening.
Of course.
And people that I met, and I see the good in everybody. And the people that I met took care of me. And everybody was like a big brother to me.
Sure.
And obviously people, and people that maybe they do stand up for themselves. So maybe they don't take shit from people or are not passive aggressive. Right? If people, you know, I realized a lot of dudes in New York, they were real dudes. Like they held their
ground
and they take shit from people.
Yeah.
And I was like, I respect that because some people don't do that.
Well, I think the important point in there is the fact that you said that was their reality. Like that was their environment.
And it wasn't mine because I didn't grow up there.
Precisely.
So I mean,
that made it easier for you to kind of like obviously not be influenced by that and not like, you know, fall.
But I respected it because it's real stuff and
right.
it comes from a real place. And I think that's what kind of differentiates New York hardcore to a lot of the scenes.
Yeah.
Because New York City in the 80s was gnarly.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was in Chicago and Detroit too, but I know is I lived in New York then.
That was your reality, right?
And I saw that. And there was a reason why the music was more aggressive.
Right. Oh, yeah, of course. Like it was completely a product of everything that was surrounding it.
But I'm listening to NWA. I'm listening to 7 Seconds for Soul Force Revolution.
Right.
I'm listening to KRS-One. I'm going to Eric B and Rakim shows. I'm going to go see Bold Play. Like
you were just shoving everything in your head.
I took it all in. I loved it all.
Yeah.
I love hip hop. That's like one of my, I loved hip hop. It connected to me. I was teaching breakdancing in Southern Maryland at Teen Scene.
You were teaching breakdancing.
This place called Teen Scene.
This place is called Teen Scene.
I was teaching breakdancing.
Okay.
I was breakdancing at my prom. I was the prom king. I was wearing plastic see-through pants at my prom.
You saying you're the prom king does not surprise me at all.
I was the prom king, the school jester.
Okay, yeah. Well, because I'm sure most people are just like, hey, like Toby's kind of the funny guy. And then if you break out a cardboard box and you start breakdancing, how could you lose?
I was. But in school, we'll go back and forth because I'm going to be
That's
rambling
fine.
Now. But in high school, I was really, I skipped school a lot. I skated a lot. All I cared about was skateboarding, and I would skip
and
class
music,
for that.
I'm sure, yeah.
And I was so punk, not close-minded punk, but I was the jocks would mess with me, and I was so anti any sport that I would never dress down for gym. And I failed gym for 3 years straight Fs.
Oh, you were one of those.
My mom had to go to the school. I refused to wear gym shorts.
Right.
I just wore my pants. I would never. I would never take part in gym. I got straight Fs. My mom was bawling. I remember going to the school having like a meeting with the principal.
Sure.
I was like, I refuse to be part. It's not me. I'm a skateboarder. I'll mess with that. I'm not doing gym.
Right.
So I got really bad grades, and then I got my first girlfriend, fell in love, and my senior year, and then my grades started crushing.
You were motivated.
I was motivated. I was the prom king, the school jester.
That's impressive.
And it's crazy. My school was so segregated that if you look in the class of 1988 in my yearbook, which I don't have, I got to find it. It's literally so segregated. It's like black people on one side, one on the other, all on the black side or in the middle with a white uniform of choice hoodie on. Right. Swear to God, man.
Because you strike me as a person, obviously, who were able to mingle with a lot of different people.
Yeah, like, and it was the first time I experienced racism. That was not tolerated how I grew up in my household or anywhere. Yeah. And then got into punk rock, and it was definitely not tolerated. But then I went to Southern Maryland, where everything was so segregated, uh-huh. and people were saying the N-word, and it wasn't on a rap song. And right. like, I was hearing all this shit, and it was just like, that was a real culture shock for me.
Sure.
And then I went from that to fucking New York City, which was an insane culture, all cultures.
So what, you know, since you moved out when you were 18, was it one of those things where you felt that, like, I just got to get out of here? Like, I got to...
Well, throw my mom in the bus because my mom's amazing. Okay. She just told me if I didn't have a... I was supposed to have a job by a certain time.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to go there. But yeah, I got kicked out.
Right, because you didn't live up to your end of the bargain. Is that a safe...
I didn't, but then I got a job at the steakhouse washing dishes.
Okay.
You know, and I was a vegetarian. I remember I got a job at Subway. They ordered me a long sleeve shirt because my Meat is Murder GB tattoo was the only thing on my forearm. They made me wear a long sleeve Subway shirt. They would not let me have the tattoo. It was a job there.
Sure, sure.
Okay,
yeah.
So back to it. Keep me out, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And then I was just like, all I liked was New York. I was like, I got to go to New York. This is the melting
pot.
That
was where the beacon. Yeah, you were.
I got to go to New York. I know one, two, three people there. I met Sick of It All a couple times.
Right.
I'm going to New York. That's my goal. And I just went there. And I remember like living in my girlfriend's attic. They put me up there in her attic. Shelly Shackley, the girl I was with in high school, and living there. And then she had a long winding road like the movies, like a gravelly road, and I remember saying goodbye to her on the porch. We would continue our relationship to being pen pals, and that didn't last that long.
I got
the Dear John letter,
right?
And
Toby, this is time for me to move on.
And it wasn't even a year,
right?
But I'm living in Queens, and I moved to New York, and yeah, I just did it because I wanted to go there. I ended up working with Pete and Lou Sick of It All at Concrete Marketing. I worked at Roadrunner Records. I worked at all these jobs. And
yeah, you were hustling. Rooms. Sure.
Yeah, like, oh my God, promoting. I mean, we got the cases of the Pearl Jam and the Nirvana cassettes in.
Sure.
And Temple of the Dog cassettes. So I was working all these different
places. Right, just me trying to make ends meet. What was the worst job you held in New York City at the time when you were trying to, kind of piece things together? Or did you generally enjoy it? I mean,
me, Ezek, Sick of It All, and Pete Sick of It All.
Okay.
We were building the sound factory on 54th Street.
Wow.
All summer long with construction helmets, all that. And then we found out there was asbestos in there or something. And I remember Ezek's like we're on the elevator looking down, and he like clocks us out. He's like, we're out of here. We're like, what happened? He's like, we're out of here. And he clocked us all out. And I remember like walking up the hill on 54th Street going, oh my God, we all just quit together. This is awesome. But now what am I going to do?
Right.
But like we worked it all summer. It was just like disgusting.
Just brutal work. Yeah.
And then I ended up being a roadie. Doing weekend stuff with Killing Time. No, it was sure. Killing Time first. I did some stuff with Underdog, with Token Entry, like just out of town, like Connecticut and Pennsylvania things. And then Sick of It All.
Sure.
And then that was just like...
That was the entry point for everything.
They took me out of America, man.
Sure. You know, kind of fast forwarding a little bit, once the idea of once H2O started to, you know, be able to tour and you were able to, you know, quote unquote, you know, make a living out of it, whatever that meant. You know, I'm sure it's difficult to like pinpoint exactly, but when in your own head were you just like, oh wow, this band feels like real. Like people are paying attention to it. Like,
we played a show at the Wetlands. It was a great venue in New York, and I guess Dickie Barrett was here from the Boss Tones. I didn't know it. I never met him. I saw Impact Unit as a kid.
Sure.
And Monday morning, our manager, whoever it was at the time, got a phone call like, "Oh, Dickie Barrett was at your show. He loved you guys. I want to take you on a tour." And they took us. Like, that's when I realized like, people were paying attention to us, not just because it was him, but obviously the shows were getting better.
Sure.
We were packing shows, selling out shows. But then like Dickie Barrett, they took us on this tour, and like we were on tour, like opening for the Boss Tones. And then they took us on tour again when Let's Face It was blowing up.
Sure.
And those guys taught us like how to treat other bands, how to just be respectful. They're like the epitome of what bands should be.
Sure.
The sweetest, most awesome guys. Even before that record blew up, they were still humble, taking care of us. And like, they took us all around the country.
They showed you the ropes. They showed us, this is what's up.
They showed us the ropes. You know, like, I'd seen the ropes as a roadie's perspective, was Sick of It All behind the scenes.
Sure.
And then when that came, we get their phone call, and then just because Dickie liked the show, they take you on tour. Like, that's amazing. That's like the bootstrap theory, you know? Like, so all of a sudden we're on tour with them, and then we're going toward the Misfits. And then for us, it was like, we're not just going to play with hardcore bands.
Right.
We have a message. We want to go further with our message, and we don't want to just like preach to the converted, which is great. We love that. That's what got us where we are now. But like we did tours of like New Found Glory, Psalm 41.
Right. You did a lot of tours that
Story of the Year.
Most bands would probably be scared of based on the fact that
I was scared too, but I like the challenge because
you like playing in front of a room that's a little that you have to kind of convince to like
and
you.
And I still get nervous going on stage sometimes, but like I wanted the challenge. I wanted to like win these kids over. Like they'd be like this, and then by the end, all they're doing is circle pit or they're jumping or they're clapping.
Right.
You know, it's like I love that. I love that about our band. I love that we weren't scared of that stuff and like. Yeah. We're open-minded guys, and like we would like do YouTube. Like if there was a fighter show, we play With or Without You, or we sing a song called "There's a Dick in the Pit, Kick Him Out."
Right,
like, we'd stop every show if there was a fight. Like people knew you come to our shows. We're not about that.
Yeah.
And you'd be called out.
Right,
we're not going to tolerate it.
Right.
So doing that with the Boston's and like a huge crowd and like just seeing if that connection worked with a whole different audience, that's an amazing feeling.
Your mom obviously saw you starting to, you know, establish yourself like in a band with a band and stuff like that. Was it one of those things like as you were going off to New York, she's just like, well, there's Toby goes like, oh, this is scary. But like, you know, how did she feel as your band started to become, you know, whatever, successful? And like, she's
super proud. Like we've had a couple emotional stage moments where I brought on stage before I do song 5-year plan where I talk about it on the song. And that's been really emotional. Yeah, she's super proud of all three of us. Yeah. And it's crazy because when that started happening, like a bunch of cousins I never even knew started coming out of the woodwork in Massachusetts. Like a lot of cousins that were on my dad's side who I never met.
Yeah.
All these Morses are coming out.
Right.
And like my mom was coming to the show and she's like trying to tell us, explain who they are and this and that. But like, my mom's super proud and she lives out here now. All of her boys are out here.
Right.
But she worked really hard to raise us, keep a roof over our head. And she did a really great job having three boys. I can't even imagine that. And one boy with my wife.
Right.
So
I'm sure it's one of those things too, where you probably being a father and seeing how imperfect like parents are, like you have no idea what you're doing, but like when you're a kid you look up to your parents like, oh my gosh, like this is the thing. Did that moment ever wash over you where you were like, dude, my mom was like trying the best that she could with what she had?
I mean, now looking back as a parent,
exactly.
Hell yeah. I mean, it's especially for what kind of, I'm trying to think of the word I'm going to use for that.
Sure.
I'm saying she had nothing in the 70s and 60s and 70s and She did with three boys.
Yep.
And I feel like it's way easier now,
mm-hmm,
just having one boy.
Absolutely.
Even with two parents. But I'm saying like it was hard for like me to get babysitters or like whatever the wage she was getting per hour back then.
Right.
Or what kind of job she was doing. She would take any job. And I know parents would do that now if they had to, they'd do anything to take care of their children.
Yep.
But I just feel like my mom sacrificed a lot and she never really found true love again. Like my dad was like,
that was hers.
Her dude.
Yeah.
You know, she married once before and the guy was a total jerk and all three boys didn't like him. Okay. And it just wasn't the right fit, but my mom never found.
So she got married after your dad had passed away? Like a new guy was introduced to the equation? That's rough.
This guy, Bill Greco, who's a real jerk.
Right. I could easily see. I mean, that's a scary environment where the dude comes in, meets three boys who are like super rambunctious and are like ready to get him out of here.
I know.
And so he was obviously...
My brother Tal was a wild kid too, man. He was getting arrested a lot and being crazy in the streets.
Right.
Both my brothers, man. I got crazy story. I don't want to go there, but my brother was like a wild surfer, like surf punk.
Literally. How much older were they than you? I won't quote you on it. As long as you're in the vicinity.
Yeah, I think Todd's 3 years older than me and my brother Tracy is 5 years older than me.
Okay, and they've been able to navigate to where
that's
they are.
Wrong. One's 3 years, one's 4 years. I don't even know.
Yeah. Well, at that point, it's fine.
But it's crazy how we all ended up in New York for a minute and then all in California now. It's kind of crazy how that happened.
Yeah. Completely unintentionally, I'm sure.
Because I was the first one to go. Mm-hmm. I remember Tracy moved to Maryland and he's like, he was old enough to like not say, he's like, F this, I'm fucking out of here, man. This place sucks.
Right.
Went back to Newport. He went back to Rhode Island.
Sure.
I went to New York and then later on, Todd's band Outcrowd ended up moving up there.
Okay.
Try to really focus on their career. And I was already up there with H2O.
Sure.
It's crazy, man.
Yeah, that's funny.
I just saw a flyer from our first CBGB show where we opened up the show as a blackout showcase and Outcrowd was like up there.
Right.
And now there's two guys in the band. It's just...
Because I'm sure this is something that, especially because like H2O has existed for a long time, I'm sure it's something that you guys probably have internal conversations or maybe internal conversations in your own head, because you don't want to be one of those bands that overstays their welcome.
Yes.
And like not in a mean way, but it's like, yep. you see bands that are out there kind of like grasping at straws, yep. being like, oh, hey, let's do a 10-year tour for a record that is like really irrelevant. Like no one really like, you know.
Yes.
So I'm sure what thoughts do you have in your head as far as like, you know, not saying that like, oh, if you don't have fun anymore, you're going to break up the band tomorrow. But like, I'm sure that's a conscious thought in your head.
It is a conscious. Here's the thing. I always say that when kids stop coming to see us, we'll stop playing.
Right.
And it's crazy because we are very lucky, man. We made a record on MCA that some people liked, some people hated. We took a big chance on that record.
You did.
After that, we got so burnt on touring because we were nonstop since the first album.
Right.
Then we took a 7-year hiatus. In the hiatus, we did play shows, but didn't make any music.
Right.
I had a son, moved to California. We kind of just stopped making music for a while, just trying to like focus. And then we did Nothing to Prove 7 years ago.
Right.
That record's been one of our biggest records that we have ever made.
Right.
And we were so focused on America. We want to be really bigger in America. We want to just focus on America. And we canceled so many European tours. We didn't want to go to Europe. All of our friends were going there, killing it, paving the way.
Absolutely, yeah.
And we never did it. And then we started going 7 years ago nonstop. And like their record really connected over there.
Absolutely.
So now it's like we're like almost a new band overseas.
Uh-huh.
America is still awesome, but I feel like I think it's not on purpose that we're doing 7 years between records.
Sure.
But it really helped. It really worked.
Yeah. It gelled into that.
So that really worked for us.
Yeah.
And like it is 20 years right now, but it's like obviously you don't want to flog a dead horse. You don't want to like play yourselves out. But like kids are still stoked and they're stoked to make a new record, doing a record with Chad.
Right.
And they're stoked on it. And we're trying to make the best record we can. You're only good as your last record.
Yeah. Of course.
And we'll see what happens. Like for us, it's like, we don't have any stress, but there's no really stress
right.
of what we're doing. We still go out and play shows a lot.
Right.
Like I just booked this for the rest of the year, and that's before even the record's even going to come out
right.
this year
yeah.
on the 20-year stuff. And we're very blessed that there's still young kids. And now it's like kids come to our shows that grew up seeing us. Now they have children. Now their children are right. age still,
yeah, generationally speaking. Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's
yeah.
like, yeah, I feel like if we did put records out every single year, nonstop for 20 years, it might be a different story.
Right.
But
right.
we had that break.
You had the recharge.
And I feel like we worked really hard enough to improve and that record really connected. So.
Right, right. When you took that break, I'm sure was there, you know, I guess because you are so obviously identified, you're Toby H2O.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but I mean, and this, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but like I don't look at you as having real, an inflated ego. I mean, you have an ego, but not mm-hmm. in a bad way.
Yeah.
I would label it as, was it difficult?
I don't really,
yeah, I know. But yeah. was it difficult for you to kind of, you know, once the major label record, obviously quote unquote, didn't work from a commercial yeah. perspective. Was it difficult for you to be kind of like, well, we're going to put this on the shelf for a while.
It's a weird place for me in my life. I was moving here. We were so burnt. We love each other. We're brothers, but we were nonstop touring.
Yeah.
So that record was just like, you know, I love Matt Wallace. I mean, Tarfin, that was Tarfin's dream to pick Matt Wallace, who did Faith No More Replacements albums.
Sure.
He picked him and it worked.
Right.
And Matt Wallace was actually about to not really produce anymore. And then all of a sudden this band called Maroon 5 hit him up
right
after us and changed his life.
Yeah.
Which is like, I want to put that story because I'm so happy for Matt Wallace.
Of course.
But like, that was a weird time recording that right next to Guns N' Roses in the room next to us. We were out here in California recording that record.
Yeah, you're like, what are we doing here?
It was crazy. And like when I did Nothing to Prove, like I was like, I'm putting all my heart in every single lyric, and I just that record was super important to
well,
do.
Well, you
that.
Were just, I mean, that's so for a person who's. That's what you do in the band, like
I know.
To be removed from that.
But I was so burnt when it came to doing that, it was just a crazy time. Like,
yeah.
Just like I said, you only grew your last record, and we were compared to people, we were shit because we liked that record.
Yeah, you're like, yo, we're pretty terrible.
To improve, and that was just oh shit, this is the age story I remember.
Oh yeah, oh they're good again, right?
This,
right.
This is the age story I remember. This is, yeah. and Chad gets it, and he like. He knows what he loves about the band, and so like having him in that time, it was perfect. And now it's like I told him, I'm never doing another record unless it's with you.
Right, right.
Because he gets it, and like
yeah,
I know
he comes from the same world. Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, I mean, after that, I mean, I was working at Golden Voice. I was pushing people's gear that were taking pictures of me and saying that their band opened up for me, and it was like I liked it.
Yeah.
I was having all my friends work there. Now I went from roadie to frontman to like actually
production
really
man.
Behind the scenes.
Right.
And I met a lot of people through Golden Voice. It was a fun experience. I did it for almost a year,
uh-huh.
and now it was like, and then we started Hazen Street, and then we toured on that, and like
right. Then it all yeah. Then you were just, able
and
to.
And I was like, once it, I was like, God, we're gonna do another HO record. I miss this now. It's like
right. I feel like it's the time. A few last things before I let you go, was the
it's great.
Your,
I feel like I'm on Oprah.
I'm glad you just compared me to Oprah. That's spectacular. Your family is obviously such a solid focus of your life. I mean, you make it very clear, and obviously your marriage and your son. Is it one of those things where it's like because they're there, and they're obviously supportive. It makes you feel like you're rooted to a real life. Because I see a lot of people, a lot of people that you know that kind of get into the system and get in a band, and they exist on tour 10 to 11 months out of the year. Sometimes they don't even know what it's like to be like a real quote unquote human.
That was a hard transition for me, to be honest. That was a real reality, because this is reality and tour is fantasy. And I toured so much that break was a hard reality for me. Mm-hmm. You know, doing the Golden Voice job was great. It was awesome. But doing that kind of work and just like not touring and like, right. we did some shows here and there, but it was definitely getting back into reality. Like, because when my son was just born, I went on tour for like, I don't know, 9 weeks with Hazen Street.
Right.
But my wife said, that's the best time to go. He barely even knows. You know what I'm saying? He's just a baby. But coming back to that and then like getting back in the gist of it. Now I'm like a full-time carpooling dad. Like, I love being home.
Yeah. You're Mr. Mom.
But now I get the itch to go play shows too. I have a good balance. I'm very blessed because I do be able to take my son to Europe this summer if I want to go.
Right.
My wife was selling merch for us for like, I don't know, 16 years. I have my wife with me. And then it went from not having my wife with me to actually being on tour without my wife, and I have a son at home.
Right.
So that reality was totally hard, but coming back and being home and this kind of, it's hard. Yeah, it's definitely, it was hard. It still gets hard. I was with Russ yesterday. He's like, man, we're going to play some shows again. We've been home for too long. I'm like, dude, we've been home for like 2 months.
But
you get used to it, and I love it. I love playing shows. I love being in a band. I'm lucky it's still happening in 20 years. It's not going to be forever. I know that.
Right.
And I'm not going to drag it into the mud, and I'm not going to play shows and people don't care, but people still seem to care.
Right.
And that makes me happy.
Yeah, no, for sure.
But being home and being a dad and being domesticated and then going on tour with a bunch of animals,
right,
and I come home swearing like a sailor, my son's charging me $1 for fuck word.
Right.
All that.
He's
making,
got the
making hundreds of dollars off me. And then when I'm home for like a month or 2 months, like, okay.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X, and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
Okay, you're still acting like a sailor. Like, you've been home for a while. Enough of the swear words.
Yeah.
But like, you get on tour and it's just like, there's no rules. It's like...
No. My wife always, whenever I would come home from tour, my wife would always give me like a 3-day buffer. She was like,
that's good.
You're going to have your 3 days of like, you know, you're doing stupid shit. Like, you're not cleaning up after yourself. And it's like, and then after the end of 3 days, I'm going to start calling you out. I'm like, that makes sense.
That's a good point, because there is also transition there when you say your wife's home with your son, or you're just home by herself.
Right.
And she's got her life going on.
Absolutely.
And you're calling like every day, I miss miss you, baby. How are you doing? She's like, right. And you're like at a show or you're somewhere. Yeah. And she's just trying to maintain the house
in
her life. And then you come home and you're like all riled up from tour.
Right.
And like you want to take your son to the movies on a school night and you just want to be in the mix.
Totally.
And
I want to still have fun.
But my wife is always like, listen, I have my schedule now. Now you have to ease back into my schedule
because
I'm the single parent right here.
Right.
And so you've been gone.
Right.
I don't know if this is a true story or not. And we can look up after, but I just heard recently that Bono's wife makes him go to a hotel for like 2 days before he comes to the house when he's off tour to unwind. This is what I just heard recently.
Which is
pretty amazing. And I totally can relate to that.
Absolutely.
Because when I get home.
Because you're coming in for a crash landing.
Yeah.
That's all you do.
And I'm like texting my son, like, oh, this movie's coming. I'm doing movies this week. Because like, when I get home, I want to get, because I feel guilty. And when I'm home, you can ask any of my fucking friends. They ask me, I never go out. I'm like a hermit. Right. Like, I feel like, and Moon's like, go out with your friends. I'm always feel like I leave so much. I feel so guilty.
I'm making just up going for lost time.
I feel really going out. He's like, hey, go out and have with your friends. I'm like, yeah, but I'm with my friends in my band when I'm on tour. When I'm home, I feel like I just want to be like home. And like, you go out, have fun with your friends. You go.
Right.
Because that's what makes a marriage and that's the balance of
it.
You know?
That's the pull that I'm sure you feel.
It is. Yeah, yeah. So yeah, they're like, back to this question, because I'm rambling because I have ADD, OCD, which I really don't have.
Right, right.
is that, you know, the coming home and getting back to real life, it was super hard.
Yeah.
And now I have this comfortable balance where I'm home now and I just book myself the rest of the year. I know that like Max is coming with me to Chicago and then I'm going to leave there and I go back. Then Max will come with me in the summer.
Right.
And then I go to Europe for 7 days and he goes to Nana Camp every summer in July. So we plan it. So
you got it.
Yeah. My son's in Chicago. Moon's here and I'm in Europe. I come home. We all meet together somewhere and then we do something.
Right.
So I'm very lucky. But my ultimate goal, which I haven't talked about, is one life, one chance that I can speak at schools.
And that is exactly how we're ending.
Here's
it up.
Here's a closer.
No, it is. It's the closing question. So yeah, obviously, like, you know, one life, one chance. Like it's so funny because I'm sure you've noticed this too, where I find a lot of like, you know, dudes in bands or whatever, like once they kind of get off the road, like a lot of them take up teaching because there is like some sort of mimicking feeling of like getting up in front of people and like obviously like
talking.
Right. Like there's some correlation there that gives them the same feelings. And I'm sure it's, you know, subconsciously it was the same idea as what you had with H2O, where you're like, hey, let's play to people who have no idea what hardcore is. Like, I need to take this message to the schools to show like, yo, like I've done cool shit and I don't have to be, you know, completely annihilated, inebriated, whatever.
Totally. And if you sense, it's not really the same. I mean, I'm on the stage with a microphone. Yes.
Yep.
When I'm on the stage with this microphone with H2O, they know who I am, what I'm doing there, what I'm about to say.
Yep.
But at a school, you cannot swear, which I haven't done yet after 30 schools. It's so scary.
I'm sure you were just sitting up there and be like,
you cannot swear. I've never had the most fear in my life like the first school I did.
Sure.
After that, it's all good.
Yeah.
But
you just had to do it once.
But you're going there pretty much as this tattooed. All they know is you're a tattoo musician from a band. They don't know anything about your band, which I don't care if they do.
Right.
And they see you walk on stage and then you give a PowerPoint presentation about your life, the different people who passed away from drugs and alcohol, the people who inspired you, the people that couldn't still inspire you, who are like successful athletes or musicians who do not party. But they're looking at you and just full on like arms crossed judgment
until
you're done. And then they realize, oh, wow, this guy's legit.
Yeah.
But the thing that I like about it the most is for the kids is that the connection is so real and it happens so fast. And I'm not a guy with a suit on. I'm not a guy saying I'm a recovering addict.
You're relatable.
I'm relatable. I'm not a cop. I'm not a teacher. I'm not your parent. I'm just a dad with tattoos who's in a band who just happened to like live this lifestyle.
Of course.
And I'm breaking stereotypes of musicians who you always see in the news for being in rehab or overdosing or cheating on their wives or being this piece of shit.
Well, the thing that I think you're trying to subvert is obviously the like you said, a lot of the cliches that exist.
Yeah.
Like people assume that
so many.
Because you were in a band, you must do this. But when you get up there, showcase the fact that you started this stuff, like being in a band and being active in a music scene when you were in high school. I think so many kids don't make that correlation where they're like, oh, you mean I can start like now? Like when I'm 16? Yeah. Yes. And like seeing you in front of them being like, oh shit, he did that. Like, I'm sure it's like.
But also I make sure I say they should have a plan B and C.
Of course.
Because.
Well, you didn't.
I didn't. But right now the speaking is my plan B. The speaking is the plan B.
Okay,
I'm telling
them. Got it.
But if I hadn't lived this life of doing all this music and these experiences in my life, I wouldn't have nothing to talk about. So
true.
I'm glad I did that. And like my ultimate goal would be doing this full time all during the school year, and in the summer I just go play festival shows. That'd be amazing.
That's what you want.
But right now it's not that because it's super hard. There's lots of red tape and there's lots of, it's such a big process of getting to
a
school.
Of course.
But what we're working on now is trying to get raise money in our own way with good fundraising and stuff, so we can go to all these schools. So I see emails go through on my phone every single day that have no money, who need us the most. So then we can go, okay, we're going to come to all your schools. We got it. We're going to take care of it.
Yeah.
Because all I need to do is just get there. Just get me there.
Right. Totally. So get there, get you in a room with some kids.
That's it.
That's it.
So that's our goal right now. It's been 5 years this month.
Right.
And I've been to like over 30 schools, and mostly it's just all grassroots DIY style.
Of course. Yeah.
From the internet, or people who are fans of my band who now they're on the PTA, or they're teachers, or they're police officers.
Right.
But then it started spreading from those schools to other schools. Hey, this guy just came, check it out. Then I started getting schools just on the strength of what other principals were saying about my visit.
Of course.
Which is great.
That is.
So, I mean, my main thing is my main influence was having a son and seeing how scary it was and wanting to give him a great life, and also seeing what kids are exposed to on these freaking iPhones and on YouTube and on everywhere, what kids can...
They have the entire world at their fingertips.
They do. And it's like, there's no role models. Like, for me, it was from listening to records. It wasn't a rapper on the radio. It was people where I read interviews in fanzines. It was people who got thank you lists on records. I said, oh, check out this band. Oh my God, I can relate to this. So for us growing up, it was different role models. And I feel like I didn't have a father figure. So I did look to Ian McKay, Kevin Seconds, Ray Capo, so many different frontmen, or just people in bands I looked up to because I could relate to their message. And kids don't have that. I feel like kids just have like this, like, I don't know what they have. I mean,
it's just kind of like out there. It's like every quote unquote role model, from like a sports star to a celebrity or whoever, they themselves usually say, like, you know, don't look at me as a role model. Like, don't look at me as a hero.
That's true. I know.
Yeah.
But then there's like, you know, the Kardashians are like probably some of the biggest role models for the youth right now.
Right.
And I feel like,
what values are they promoting?
What values are they promoting? Yeah. Exactly. I don't know. And it's
right.
Like,
and that's
not to diss them, because they're doing their thing. They got their hustle. That's good. But I feel like there needs to be this. I'm not trying to say I am the role model for these kids.
Yeah. You're the solution. It's offering an option.
I'm offering an option. Here's my friend CJ Wilson. He's been straight-edged his whole life. He's a pitcher for the Angels.
Totally.
Here's Hilly Williams. She doesn't party. Chaffinu from Glory. CM Punk, number one wrestler.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? These are all my friends who are highly successful, and they don't have to party.
Right.
And they made right, smart decisions. That's what I try to give the kids. Like, these are some role models. These are some people I think that...
Here's some people you look at. Like, that you can look at their path and understand that you don't have to... You don't have to follow it exactly, but understand that they're in places of prominence because of their focus and their ability to obviously not be swallowed up by the quote unquote system.
And I know people are people, and the kids are going to try things and they're going to experience things.
Yep.
And that's just part of life. But my main thing is like, hey, you have a couple options in life. You could choose this path, that path, or that path.
Right.
You know, just be smart about it.
Yeah.
I'm letting you know that I chose the best path I could do with, you know, people always say like, oh, it's my parents' fault. I grew up with one parent,
right,
and I feel like I turned out pretty good. So don't blame everything on your parents. Look to your relatives as your role models, but like, and I ask kids, like, who are your role models? Is it Nicki Minaj? Is it Lil Wayne?
Right.
Who
is it? Right.
Who was in jail for having a gun in New York? Or, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's just like, just so many different, kids have so many options.
Yeah.
They have way more options for role models than I had, but their options to me personally aren't.
Well, you're crippled, and they're also crippled by choice. Like, they don't, you know,
yeah.
It's like, there's so many, like, where are you even going to look to? But I'm very excited you're doing that, because it's exactly, like I said, it's applicable exactly in the same way that what you tried to do with H2O, where you were taking the principle of what you learn in a sort of whatever hardcore punk world and apply it to the real world. Because otherwise, like, it's not going to be perpetuated otherwise. So.
It's not. The support from it, from every single, all types of friends I have, friends who aren't even straight edge, friends who aren't even positive.
Right.
Just friends in general are stoked that I'm doing something like that, and that it's working, and people want to help. And it's been really great. And
it's exciting.
Because of that, Ian McKay was like one of my idols growing up, and like, he knows what I've been doing. I've seen stuff that he's talked about me at schools, and I didn't do it what I'm doing is not to get recognition from people that inspire me to do it.
Right.
But to have somebody like that,
mm-hmm.
who was such a role model with me, backing it and think that it's really cool and something positive taking from that movement,
absolutely
makes me so happy.
Yeah.
Like, it makes me super stoked. Like, oh, it's almost like your dad gave you the thumbs up. Like, good job.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That's like, anybody ever wants.
But, it's not like I did it for that. It just so happens that I was in the cover of a newspaper, first time in my entire life, not even H2O, and then the background was a minor threat picture, and the police officer sent it to Ian, and I saw it. It was just awesome.
Yeah, it's
like just little things like that. And like, I do it because I love it. You know, we're definitely struggling. you know, we definitely need money to get to schools, and that's all we need the money for.
Right.
I mean, I love doing it more than anything. And you know, the energy.
You feel like that.
It's a different high, too. It's like
it's the next chapter.
It's the next chapter.
That's exciting.
I have a nonprofit 501c3, which took almost a year and a half to get. It was very, very difficult.
Yeah, those aren't easy.
And I have a great board of people, and like everybody's focused this year. And last year was kind of hard. There was a lot of schools coming through, but I know a lot of budget cuts.
Yeah.
So we're just figuring out how we can make this happen for off the internet of all the emails to real life.
Right.
You know, and also get different ways to raise money and make people more aware of what we're trying to do, because I don't think there is a dare anymore.
Yeah. It's
not there. And it's like, I had people come to my school and talk about not doing drugs. And when you go there and you yell at kids, tell them what to do, they're going to go outside and do exactly what you told them not to do.
Of course.
That's why, same with being on H2O on stage and on stage at schools, I never preached, never said, don't do this, don't do that. I'm just going to speak about my experiences, and if you relate to them, that's awesome.
Right. If that's inspiring to you, that's great.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So that's the mission. You know, sometimes if they say, why you look so young, I say, oh, because I'm a vegan. Yeah, this is why.
Exactly.
Gorilla biscuits and like Gorilla biscuits. So I don't really talk about the veganism thing there, because that's another thing that would really scare people.
Sure.
At the schools, but when almost every school they ask you, how can you look young? Or how can you have so much energy? How can you still skateboarding? And I say, well, you know, his diet since 88. And like,
right.
Some kids like, oh, you know, I'm gluten free, or I can't have any dairy, or like,
right.
Some kids start raising their hands, oh, I'm vegetarian, or
that
stuff you have to be kind of careful about, because
of course. Well, yeah, you got it. You sneak it in the back door, so to speak.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, it's just another,
it happens. So it comes in the questions on the Q&A time. I'm almost like,
it's exciting though.
So I'm like, I mean, I love to see anybody from my graduating class in 1988 come skate a ramp with me or jog with me.
Sure. Fit for 40, right? That's what you say all the time, right?
Always. This is a push-up contest. Cause I'm proud of this music that got so much either negative
Absolutely.
Or positive backlash, like about how like punk rock's crazy and skateboarding is crazy. I was just talking to my friend on the phone just now. He's like, "Oh, you guys want someone to skate tomorrow?" I was like, "Oh, we really didn't skate growing up. Our parents really didn't allow it because they thought that skateboarders had a bad rep."
Right.
And I'm like, "Man, but look at it now. Look at
2015, man."
I'm just saying, like, all this stuff that my mom thought I was crazy, or kids at school made fun of me about, or people thought I was weird about, has helped me stay healthy and feel like I'm so young because of this stuff that inspired me. And like,
that's incredible though.
I just love to see the same people now who are making fun of me then,
right,
and see what kind of path their life took.
Sure, exactly.
Because when I was a guy being called gay for not having a girlfriend and I was going to take my skateboard to the prom and all this stuff, I'd love to see that. Not to be like, oh, I'm better
not
than you.
Not to rub it in your face.
But not to that,
like,
but it's like, you know, I feel like this music has guided me on a awesome path.
Right, exactly, to where we're here right now.
Am I talking too much?
No. Well, Toby, we did this. Thank you very much.
Thanks
I really
for having me. I know
it.
It's been a long time, and I'm
you no stop.
I appreciate it.
I appreciate you. Thank
I appreciate
you.
All the things you do too for the animals and for everything.
Oh, stop. I'll stop. So that was Toby. Hopefully that was educational for you. He's a great guy, right? I mean, like, you can totally tell from that interview, like, what he's gone through, all of these different avenues that he has explored in his life to be able to just ultimately pursue what it is that makes him happy, which is obviously music. And that's all that we're trying to do in some capacity. Just stay connected to that thing that brings us life, which is music or art or whatever it is. Just try to hold on to that as long as you can, because the moment you kind of let go of it, and when I say let go, I don't mean like let go like, oh, dude, you're not going to every show, or you're not checking out the newest band or movie every weekend. It's like, everyone needs to make concessions in their lives, but you still need to have those touchstones. You still need to have those things that are meaningful to you and are dear to you and give you life. So Toby is a prime example of that, and I really appreciate him. And a special shout out to my friend Jeff, who is helping him with the One Life, One Chance Foundation. And you can find that very easily on the internet. And it's a great thing where Toby goes into schools, speaks about his experience with straight edge and positivity, and leaves kids with a very, very positive message, which at the beginning of the show I was alluding to was just such a great component of what it is that Toby is as a person. So the producer, as always, is Tom Richfield. Visit the show's website, 100wordspodcast.com. Sign up to the little email news blast I send out once a week, which gives you a little bit more context on the show and how these interviews take place and just any other anecdotes I can share to you. And you can do that. There's a little email box you can type in there. And next week is the 3-year anniversary. And I'm not going to tell you that it's some like massive blowout, but there will be some new things that I'm excited to share with you. So until next week, be safe, everybody.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Trust me in saying that no matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all of the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
The following is a high-five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
Welcome to Burger Yippee. Would you like a hot apple pie today?
Yes, yes, yeah, I won! Woohoo!
So that's a yes on the apple pie?
I just went big time playing High Five Casino on my phone. Real cash prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. Yeah!
So yes or no on the apple pie?
Woo! I won again!
I'll take that as a yes. Drive around.
Have you had your high-five moment today? Only at HighFiveCasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
You wouldn't expect to hear that we're America's third best city for beer like this one. Or home to vibes like this. And this. It might surprise you that we're top 10 for immersive art that's like,
whoa.
And,
hmm.
Not to mention, we have one of the top zoos in the country. So can a city with the country's best pro soccer team, ranking as a top culinary destination in the world, be in your own backyard? Yes, Columbus. Plan your summer at experiencecolumbus.com/summer.